Okay, I guess we'll start. Plan for today is to work away partially through a sample exam. There's 10 problems on this practice exam, and there'll probably be 10 problems also on the final exam. But I'm going to work through these slowly. I'll probably get through the material that was covered on the first two exams today, and then I'll save for Friday questions about material we've covered since the last exam, which means determinants, eigenvectors and eigenvalues, diagonalization, and orthogonal decompositions. Those topics I'll cover on Friday as they appear on the final exam. Okay, so the first thing I want to stress is, just like on the second exam, I guarantee that there are going to be four problems on the essential definitions for this course. The notion of what a subspace is, what a basis, what a set of linear independent vectors is, and what a linear transformation is. And what I'm expecting on the final exam is to you to give correct definitions verbatim as best you can. So so let me work out the each of these problems. So a subspace, as the name indicates, this should be something like a small vector space. And indeed, what it is a subspace of a vector space V is what? It's a subset of your vector space. So let's call that subspace W of V, such that, well, you have two conditions related to the fundamental operations of linear algebra. First of all, with respect to scalar multiplication, so if you have a number and you have a vector that starts off living in that subspace, then necessarily what's got to happen is that scalar multiple of your vector by lambda has to continue to reside within that vector space, or within that subset. And second of all, you need, if you have two vectors that start off living inside your subset, what you require is that their vector sum stays inside that subset. Okay, so there's one definition. Second definition that's going to be here on the final exam is, what is the basis? And the idea of a basis is this is going to be the thing that allows us to coordinatize subspaces and, more generally, vector spaces. But the definition doesn't really include that intuitive or formal idea so much as the test that you need to make sure that you have a set of vectors that will actually do what you want, provide you with good coordinates. So what we say is a basis for a subset is a set of vectors. Let's say B equals B1 through BK, such that, first of all, you need to be able to reach every vector inside your subspace by taking linear combinations of this list of vectors. And so what you're going to want is that for all vectors that live inside your subspace, W is going to be capable of being represented as a linear combination of these vectors. So C1 times B1 plus C2 times B2, et cetera, until we reach the last basis vector, with these coefficients, C1 through CK, unique. So that's actually two conditions. But first of all, you have to be able to reach every vector inside your subspace just by using formal expressions of this form. But you also have to require that the coefficients are unique. It's the uniqueness of these coefficients that allow us to use the numbers C1 through CK as coordinates for a vector W that lives inside the subspace capital W. All right, a third definition. What is a set of linearly independent vectors? Well, actually, that's one of the requirements we would impose on a basis, is that all these vectors have to be linearly independent. But these definitions are related to tests we can perform to make sure that the objects will do what we want. And linear independence here is a simple test to make sure that, in fact, if you have a set of linearly independent vectors, that you'll be able to uniquely write. You have a set of vectors that that are capable of reaching every vector in D, and they're linearly independent, then this condition will be automatic. This uniqueness of these expansions will be automatic. But the formal definition is a set of vectors is, let's call that set V1 through VK. So a set of vectors V1 through VK is going to be linearly independent if and only if the only solution of, here's the equation we want, say x1 v1 plus dot dot plus xk vk equals 0, is all these coefficients have to separately vanish. Xk is equal to 0. All right, so here, you're to regard these coefficients as unknowns. This is it's an equation for the numbers x1 through xk. The vectors that used to generate this equation, they're linearly independent if you only have one solution of that, and that's the solution where all the coefficients are equal to 0. Now, if you have a basis, and these basis vectors satisfy a condition like this, then this is going to be automatic. But these are two separate definitions. In fact, the textbook uses a different definition of basis. The textbook says that a basis is a set of vectors such that every vector can be written this way, and the vectors are linearly independent. Then this follows as a theorem, that if you have a set of linearly independent vectors that such that every vector in your subspace can be reached via such a linear combination, then these guys are unique. But I'm sticking to this definition and this consequence or this notion of linear independence as being a separate idea. And finally, we have a notion of a linear transformation. And this is about functions between two vector space. So a linear transformation between two vector spaces, V and W, is a function. So a rule for taking elements of V to elements of W, let's write it T, V, going to W, such that, well, again, since we're in linear algebra, what we worry about is how scalar multiplication and vector addition behave. And in fact, what we require is that when we apply the function to a scalar multiple of a vector inside the domain, let me call it V, then what should happen is that I could effectively delay that scalar multiplication until after I apply the function. So this should be true for all numbers lambda and all vectors V that live inside that domain, capital V. And similarly, for vector addition, you want T V1, sorry, arrow there, plus the second vector V2 should be equal to T of V1 plus T of V2. And that would be for all vectors V1, V2 in the domain of that function. Okay, so memorize these definitions and be prepared to write them down verbatim, and then you'll get what? 20 points automatically on the final exam.
Yeah, for all.
Okay, the next problem two on this practice exam, is you'll probably see something like this again on the final exam. I like this sort of problem because it doesn't involve any calculations per se, but you have to sort of understand the calculation that underlying the problem in order to state the answer. So here what you're supposed to do is interpret each of these matrices as the augmented matrix of a linear system, but not the original augmented matrix, but one where the augmented matrix has been reduced to, well, it looks like each of these matrices is in row echelon form. And in fact, once if you start with a linear system, start with a linear system, AX is equal to B, then of course the way we solve it is we construct the augmented matrix and we row reduce. And typically this proceeds first, you go to a row echelon form, and then this gets the pivots this orders the pivots of this augmented matrix correctly, but there's some more we have to do in order to actually find the solution of this. Once you get it in row echelon form, then you go to reduce row echelon form. And then from this, you get the equations, and eventually you get the hyperplane solution. Okay, now, this problem too only addresses like the first half of a typical calculation here. I'm only on this problem too. What I'm imagining is I started off with a linear system. I wrote down the augmented matrix and I've row reduced to halfway. I've row reduced to a row echelon form. And what I'm asking you in this problem is to look at this thing and tell me what the answer should look like, as well as what kind of linear system this matrix in reduced whole echelon form came from. All right, so let's look at these guys. So this guy, the coefficient part of the augmented matrix, has four rows and four columns. So the original system had to come from a system with four equations and four unknowns. Similarly, if this one, it's also, if you look at the coefficient matrix, there's four columns, so there's four unknowns, and there's four rows, so that also came from four equations and four unknowns. And the last one looked like one, two, three, four, five columns, but four rows. So the number of rows is the number of equations and five unknowns. Okay, so you should be able to look at an augmented matrix and figure out what kind of linear system it came from. That's the first half of this. And then the second half was to determine if there are solutions. And if there are solutions, how many free parameters we occur. Okay, so in preparation for that, let me underline the pivots that occur in these row echelon forms of augmented matrices. Here's the guy that's gonna cause us problems if we actually proceed further and try to actually solve the linear system. Because this third row, it corresponds to a particular equation. It says that 0 times x1 plus 0 times x2 plus 0 times x3 plus 0 times x4 is equal to 1. But that third row is then saying that 0 is equal to 1, which is a contradiction. And so in that second problem, there's no solution. Because amongst these four equations, there's one that's definitely contradictory. All right. So that actually answers the question for part B, but for parts A and C, we don't have that issue where we have a pivot in the last column. And so we will have solution. This one is also going to have solutions. But to figure out the number of free variables we have in our solution, what we do is we look at the matrix, augmented matrix in row echelon form, and count the number of columns of out pivots. So in this first one, you'll see that X3 and X4, because they correspond to columns of out pivots, these are going to be free. And in this one, even though this all zeros in this column, don't forget about the associated variable. X1 is going to be a free variable. X2, X3, and X4 correspond to columns with pivots, so they're not going to be free. But this last column, fifth column, doesn't have a pivot, so it is going to be free. And similarly here, so here we're going to have, this is going to have a solution with two free parameters, which are going to be X3 and X4. And this one is going to be four equations at five unknowns, and it has a solution with two free parameters. X1 and X5. Okay, and so that's the solution to the second problem. All right, so any questions so far? All right, now the next problem is problem where we actually solve a linear system. So here I have a system with looks like three equations and three unknowns. And what we're to do is we're to solve the linear system expressing the solution set as a hyperplane. So I'm going to follow this procedure here. First thing we do is we write down the augmented matrix. So that amounts to reading off the coefficients and the numbers on the right-hand side. So we're going to have coefficient of x1 in the first equation is 0. Then minus 1, 2, line 0. Second equation is 2, minus 3, 0. There's no x3 in the second equation. 2, and then 1, minus 1, minus 1, 1. All right, that's our augmented matrix that we start off with, deduced directly from the original equations. Now, we'll do the row reduction. First row echelon form. So maybe the first thing to do is get a pivot up in this upper corner. This is the most convenient one. Using a 1 for a pivot is always nice. So let's interchange rows 1 and 3. And we'll get 1, minus 1, minus 1, 1. The second row is not changing. 2, minus 3, 0, 2. And then 0. Minus 1, 2, 0. Okay, well, I didn't have a pivot up in this corner, and this is where we're going to start. So the first thing I did is make sure I got a pivot up there. Now I'll use this pivot to clear out entries below it. So I'll send row 2 to row 2 minus 2 times the first row. And that's going to produce 1, minus 1, minus 1, 1. That row's not changing. The last row is not changing either, 2, 0. And let's see. So 2 minus 2 times 1 is 0. 3 minus 2 times negative 1 is going to be minus 1. 0 minus 2 times negative 1 is going to be 2. And then 2 minus 2 is going to equal 0. All right, so we got that. And now we see we do one more row operation, send row 3 to row 3 minus row 2. I'm going to get an augmented matrix that's now in row echelon form. 0, minus 1, 2, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. So that's the row echelon form of the original augmented matrix. But we've only reached this stage of this procedure for completely solving the system. What's wrong and what keeps this from being in a reduced raw echelon form is, first of all, the pivots have to be equal to 1, so I'm going to have to rescale this first row to the second row, multiply it by minus 1 to get that pivot equal to 1. And then I also have an entry sitting above the pivot in the second row. So I'll do two things. First of all, I'll send row 2 to minus row 2, and I'll also send row 1 to row 1 minus the original row 2 there. So let's correct this one. If I subtract the second row from the first row, I'm going to get 1, 0, negative 3, and then 1. And then the second row, the only thing I'm doing here is multiplying by minus 1, negative 2, 0, and third row is not changing. All right, now I've reached reduced row echelon form. I've reached this stage of the process, and so the next stage is going to be to convert back to equations. The first row is telling us that x1 minus x3 is equal to 1. The second row is telling us that x2 minus 2x3, sorry, minus 3x3 minus 2x3 is equal to 0. And the last row doesn't tell us anything. It just says 0 is equal to 0. But what I do next is I realize that this third column, because it doesn't contain a pivot, it's going to be free. That's going to be a free variable. So I take these equations and I move the free variables to the right-hand side. Then I get x1 is 1 plus 3x3, and x2 has to equal 2x3. All right, now I've got the equations as simple as I can write them. Now I'm going to write a corresponding hyperplane solution. So I try to write a typical vector, x1, x2, and x3, but I'll use these two equations to substitute where I can for the variables that correspond the columns with pivots. And that's going to lead to x1 is equal to 1 plus 3x3, x2 is 2x3, and the last component is just x3. And now the last step is to take this vector and expand it in terms of the free variables. So we have constant terms. The only constant vector term here is this one there. And then I have terms that are proportional to x3, and that's going to be 3 in the first component, 2 in the second component, 1 in the last component. And then this is the answer. What I've done is I've displayed a solution vector as living on a hyperplane. Well, in fact, it's a line. It's a one-dimensional hyperplane. Here's your starting point, and then you're allowed to depart from that starting point an arbitrary distance, controlled by that factor, in this particular direction. So that's a one-dimensional hyperplane, where in general, a hyperplane is a set of the form some starting point, and then you're allowed to depart from the starting point in some fixed set of directions, S1 to Sk, ranging in R. And this expression does have this form, it's just that we only have we have a particular constant vector here, and then we have some arbitrary function. This is a free some arbitary parameter. This is a free parameter times a particular vector, and that's your corresponds to V1. Okay, so that's really a fundamental calculation, and the first exam was really building up to so that this particular calculation that we effectively do over and over again in this course, should be able to do a simple problem like this to completion. What I'll try to do, as I did it in this practice exam, is once you get to the augmented matrix, I'll try to make the row reduction proceed pretty quickly. But be prepared to perhaps interchange rows or deal with variables for which the corresponding column contains all zeros, etc. If you know the algorithm, then this is pretty straightforward. And so just follow the algorithm. All right. So the next problem, another application of row reduction, it's where we use row reduction to compute the inverse of a matrix. All right, so here I give you a 3x3 matrix. The way you find an inverse, if you're ambitious, you could try you doing a cofactor expansion, computing the cofactor matrix and use the cofactor. But really for a 3x3 matrix, the fastest way to compute its inverse is to just row reduce the matrix I get by adjoining to the given matrix, the identity matrix. And the idea is to take this to its reduced row echelon form. And what will happen is that either the left-hand side row reduces to the identity matrix, and when that happens, whatever happens to the identity matrix side, that becomes the inverse, or no inverse exists. And more precisely, if the left-hand side does not row reduce to the identity matrix, then no inverse is going to exist. All right, so let's do this row reduction. I think the nicest thing to do is immediately put a 1 up in this corner. So I'll just interchange let's see, when I flip, I'll have 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1. And then let's see, I'll have 2, 1, 0, and -2, 0, 1. All right, so all I did here is I interchanged row 1 and row 2 because life is much simpler when your pivots are equal to 1. It makes it easier, for example, to remove these pivots in the lower rows because I just have to multiply the first row by negative 2 to get this, when I combine row 1 and row 2, to get that term to drop out. And if I multiply this row by 2, I can cancel out that guy. And so that's what we'll do next. We'll send row 2 to row 2 minus 2 row 1. And we'll send row 3 to row 3 plus 2 row 1. Then row 1 doesn't change. But the second row is we're going to have 2 minus 2 is 0, 1 minus 2 times 0 is 1, 0 minus 0 is 0, then I'll have 1 minus 2 times 0 is 1, 0 minus 2 times 1 is negative 2, and 0 minus 0 is 0. Similarly, 2 plus negative 2 is 0, 0, 2 times 0 plus 1 is 1, and then 0 plus 0 is 0, 2 plus 0 is 2, and 0 plus 1, 2 times 1 is 0, it's going to be 1. All right, and good. We've reached this form. Notice that the on the right-hand side, we have the identity matrix. That means, sorry, left-hand side, you have the identity matrix. That means the right-hand side is the inverse of A, and so your answer is A the minus first is 0, 1, 0, 1, minus 2, 0, 0, 2, 1. Okay? Okay, so let's do another problem. Here I want you to test to see whether or not a given subset of R3 is actually a subspace. So what am I looking for? Well, let's go back to the first problem, and remember that a subspace is a set of vectors that's closed under both scalar multiplication and vector addition. So what I'm going to have to do in this fifth problem is check to see if these conditions are satisfied. So here's the set. W is the set of all vectors x, y, z in a three-dimensional vector space such that their sum of their components is equal to 1. So let's let W equal the vector 1, 0, 0. Because 1 plus 0 plus 0, the sum of these three components, does equal 1, that means that vector I wrote down here does live inside that subspace. Let's choose, to check scalar multiplication, let's just choose lambda equal to 0. Then lambda times W is going to equal, well, it's going to equal 0, 0, 0, because each component of W is being multiplied by 0. But now, this vector, when we add up its components, we get 0. And that's not the same as the condition we need to live inside this set, capital W. And so this means that lambda times W does not satisfy the condition required on the elements of the set capital W. And so it's not closed under scalar multiplication. And for that reason, it's not a subspace. If you show this much, you're done with the problem. But alternatively, what you could have done is instead of looking at scalar multiplication, you could have looked at vector addition. And so, or another way of solving the problem is to take two vectors, say 1, 0, 0, and another vector 0, 1, 0. Both of these guys live inside that set, capital W, because the sum of their components is going to equal 1. But when I add them together, I'm going to get a vector with two non-zero components, and for which 1 plus 1 plus 0 equals 2, which is not equal to 1. And so the sum of the components of the sum of W1 and W2 is 2, not 1. So this vector, this combination, does not lie in our subset. So it is not an element of the subspace. And so the subset is not closed under vector addition. And so it's not a subspace. So not a subspace. Yeah.
What would be an example of an equation, I guess, that would be a subspace?
Where it is? Well, that's actually harder to prove, because then what you have to do is take somehow take an arbitrary vector and make sure that no matter what number you multiply that vector, as long as it starts off in that set, then you have to write a sort of generic element of the set, and then make sure that you do scalar multiplication, what happens to that generic element stays inside the set. Or you have two generic elements of your set, and you add them together, do not say. That's usually harder to prove, because instead of having to display a single counterexample, you have to show abstractly that no matter how you choose lambda, no matter how you choose W, that lambda times W is in the set. And I typically don't do that on a final exam, because that's closer to a closer to a proof when all I really are expecting you to know is that the set has to be closed under scalar multiplication and vector addition. So look for contradictions to that. That's easy to, that's easier to spot and what vector to choose so that you get a contradiction. That you can usually figure that out. And that, so that's typically the way I ask the questions about whether a given subset is a subspace. Okay. So I'm sorry for those of you who are watching online. I'm working on the whiteboard quite a bit. If you want to see the solutions, they're already posted on Canvas, and so you can follow my discussion, what's going on in lecture here, by looking at the solutions that are already posted on Canvas. They're right at the top of our Canvas page. Okay, so let's move on. Maybe what I can do that will make life easier for people who are watching online is work directly on the paper here. So taking care of this one, in problem six, what you're given are a set of four vectors inside a four-dimensional vector space, and you're asked to determine if they're linearly independent. Now, the definition here, I'm not expecting you to apply the definition directly. That is to make sure that a linear combination of these four vectors can only equal zero when all the coefficients are equal to zero. Rather, what I want you to do in this case is just think of the algorithm by which we determine if vectors are linearly independent. What we do is we take the vectors and we write them as the rows of a matrix. So if we set A equal to the matrix, I'll set A equal to the matrix, or I use these four vectors as rows, 1, minus 2, 2, 1. The second row will have 1, minus 1, 3, 1. Third row will have 0, 1, 1, 0. In the fourth row, we have 2, minus 3, 5, and 2. All right, so the point of this is that the row space of this matrix A is exactly the span of the original vectors. The question can be answered by looking at this matrix and figuring out what the dimension of that row space is. If the dimension is 4, that will mean that each of the original rows was linearly independent. But if we row reduce this matrix and we get a zero row at the bottom, that means we're not going to have enough linearly independent rows to have a four-dimensional. In fact, the number of non-zero rows of the row echelon form of this matrix gives us precisely the dimension of this row space, which is the same as the span of these original vectors. So what I'll do is we'll simply row reduce that matrix. Let me not do the calculation. I've already done one row reduction. So here I'll just give you the answer. This matrix 1, 2, 1, et cetera, it row reduces to a matrix of the form 1, 0, 4, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. All right, now, in fact, these two vectors generate the entire row space, and so it will generate the entire subset of R4 that's generated by these four vectors using linear combinations. Now what we see is the entire space is generated by these two vectors, and they're obviously linearly independent because if I add a multiple of this row to a multiple of this row, I'll never get the zero vector unless the first component is zero, or first scalar multiple is zero. Otherwise, we won't be able to get rid of that contribution. Nor will I, unless the second scalar factor is equal to zero, I won't be able to get rid of the contribution from in the second slot. So these are two independent vectors that generate the same, two linearly independent vectors that generate the same subspace. These are going to be basis vectors, and there's just two of them. And so amongst these four vectors, there's only two linearly independent vectors. And so they're not the original set is not linearly independent. Well, let me state that here. Original set of vectors is not linearly independent. And the way you spot that is you see these zeros. It means that there was some way of adding these vectors together to produce zero rows. So there was some linear combination of the original four set of vectors that could be used to create a linear combination that sums up to the zero row. So the answer is not linearly independent. That answers part A. And then the dimension of the subspace, well, here are your basis vectors. And so it's just going to be two. You have two non-zero vectors. That's going to be a basis for the subspace that's generated by the original set of vectors. Okay, yeah.
So we had the linearly independent vectors, and we have to get the identity
matrix. Well, not necessarily the identity matrix. But what you'd want to have is, better to say, no zero row at the bottom. Because, I mean, this, if I only had two rows, and this was the matrix, it's not the identity matrix, but these two rows are linearly independent. So the main thing is to avoid these zero rows. If the zero rows occur, that means you're not linearly independent. And then when you want to know the dimension of the space that you generate by taking all possible linear combinations of the given list of vectors, well, that's going to be just two, because these two vectors will be a basis for the subspace generated by those four vectors. Okay. And so let's see where we're at. Okay, I'm going to do one last problem today, I'm more or less have covered the material that was already appeared on the first two exams. Well, and I'll save for Friday discussion of determinants and calculating eigenvectors and eigenvalues. Let's just work out this last problem, where you're given a function between two vector spaces, and you're asked, in fact, I tell you that it's a linear transformation, so you don't have to check that. All you have to do is construct the matrix that corresponds to this linear transformation, and then find a basis for the kernel of the linear transformation. So you start by forming the matrix that you can attach to such a function, and what you do is you apply your transformation to each of the standard basis vectors of the domain. So the domain is R3. So we have one standard basis vector. I'm going to write it vertically. Upon computation, we'll have a second standard basis vector, 0, 1, 0. And I'll compute what t does to this vector and write the answer vertically. And we have t applied to the last standard basis vector. And I'll write the answer vertically. Okay, upon computation, what's going to happen? So the first component is going to be the difference between the last two components of the input vector. And so I'll have 0 there in the first slot. In the second slot, I have x1 minus x3, or 1 minus 0 is 1. All right, so I'm computing these things. be careful, because to get the right matrix, here it looks like the output is going to be a horizontal vector. Remember to write the output as a vertical vector. And as long as you do that, this is pretty simple. If we evaluate t on the second standard basis vector, what we're going to get is 1, 1 minus 0, and 0 minus 0. And in the third slot, that's where the only non-zero component is x3. We'll get minus 1 from there and minus 1 from there. All right, so there's the matrix. It's not quite in reduced row echelon form, and we're going to need that reduced row echelon form to answer part B. So let's note that the reduced row echelon form of the matrix that we can attach to this linear transformation is 1, 0, minus 1, 0, 1, minus 1. Right. All I had to do to get that in reduced row echelon form is interchange the first two rows. All right, so now we can answer part B. We've got a coefficient matrix, and we've got its reduced row echelon form. If we write down equations, we're going to have x1 minus x3 is equal to 0. Second row says that x2 minus x3 is equal to 0. Or this simply says that x1 is equal to x3, and x2 is equal to x3. X3 here, reason why I'm putting x3 on the right-hand side is because that's the variable that corresponds to a column without a pivot. It's the free variable in the solution. So our solution vectors are going to be of the form x3 for x1, x3 for x2, and x3 for itself. Or simply x3 times 1, 1, 1. All right, and there's your, every solution of t of x is equal to 0 is going to be a vector of the form x3 times this vector 1, 1, 1. And so that's your basis vector. For the kernel. Okay. All right. So I think what I'll do now is just stop here. I only have 2 minutes left anyway. Yeah.
What if the x3 column is zeros, then would the basis vector be 0, 0, 1?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. If you have a column that's all zeros, that doesn't mean we can ignore that column. It means that the variable that corresponds to that column of zero is always going to be a free parameter. And you always have a term x3 times the third, only third component, yeah, third standard basis vector. Okay? Okay, so we'll continue the review on Friday. What I'll do on Friday is I'll go over the last three problems on the exam, which are based on material we've covered since the second exam.